This episode of Fireside Chat is brought to you by Robert Woodward, lawyer at Altidore Law. He specializes in family law, wills, and estates for Flame fans in Calgary and Southern Alberta. Call Robert at 403-711-2187 and mention Fireside Chat to get $100 off any legal service.
Are you ready? Sea of Red, it's time for another Fireside Chat, the official podcast of Flames fans. It's go time.
December is finally here, which means that the NHL season is fully underway, and we're 27 games in for the Calgary Flames. And after a three-game week for the Flames, we're back. We had a good week. The Flames won two of the three, and as always, I'm Dan alongside Matt. Matt, should we just jump in and break these down?
Definitely. Let's go.
First game that the Flames played last week was here in the Saddle Dome. And it was against the Dallas Stars. This is the one this week that the Flames didn't do as well as we'd like them to. They ended up losing 4-3 to Dallas in this game. Your thoughts on this one?
I thought it was a bit of a sloppy effort by Calgary for most of the game. I think that the first line struggled throughout the game. And it just wasn't the Flames' best effort. And frankly, they allowed Dallas back into the game. And, like, they should not have been trailing after two periods. And, like, they did get the lead and then coughed it up again. And it was not their best game. I can't fault Riddick for any of the goals, really. It was just one of those games where everybody kind of was a little off. Talent-wise, the Flames are better than Dallas, and we should have walked away with the 2 points, but
I think we're lucky to get the 1 point for the overtime in this one.
Yeah, Hudobin played very well for Dallas, and it is what it is. It was just not a good effort by the Flames at all.
The Flames' pure scorer, Garnet Hathaway, opened the scoring in this one, got his third of the year. But yeah, I agree with you overall. This was not a great effort. I think the one thing I will give the Flames credit for is not giving up. I think that, you know, even when they were letting Dallas back in, they still kept the play pretty close. And the fact they were able to force this to overtime and get a point out of it, that's how you salvage a lost game.
Yeah, and another thing with the overtime, I don't understand the idea of putting Gaudreau and Monahan out to start when you have two of the best snipers in the NHL between Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin on the other side. I would have thought that a guy like having Tkachuk and Backlund out for to start against those guys burn that pairing for Dallas and then put Gaudreau and Monahan out would have made more sense. And yeah, unfortunately for Calgary, they capitalized on it.
Tkachuk and Backlund, or I was even thinking Tkachuk and Bennett, because then you get a bit of the grit from both those guys.
Yeah, either way, just more of a defensive-minded mindset to start the overtime against those two stars. Like, you know, if it was, you're dealing with another team's top two guys, but they're just okay, well, then throw Gaudreau and Monahan out, but those are two of the best scorers in the league, and it kind of bit them.
Yeah, or I think you could even split them up and go something like Gaudreau, Backlund, Monahan, Tkachuk, so that if we do get the puck, we've got an offensive guy out there right away.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was kind of an odd choice.
And I still don't understand how that goal counted, frankly, in overtime.
Yeah, you know what? It's one of those things. I agree with you. I don't want to dwell too much on it, but over the whole season, you're going to get some that go your way and some that don't go your way.
Oh, I know. Just frustrating.
The next game was again at the Saddle Dome. This was the Calgary Flames taking on the LA Kings on Friday night, and the Flames handedly won this one with a 4-1 score on the board. Matt, did you think that 4-1 score on the board reflected what we saw on the ice?
You have to put the caveat in that two of those goals were empty netters. So really it was a 2-1 game. And for how the game looked, it probably should have been a 7-1 game for Calgary.
Well, even if you look at the shots, it's 37-14 in favor of Calgary.
Yeah. Like, AHL, you know, I don't even think that the Kings right now would do well in the AHL. That's how bad they're playing, and it is what it is. They're terrible. The Flames won. If the Kings were a better team, I think the Flames actually lose that game. Because, again, they were quite sloppy at times. It's just that, talent-wise, they're on a completely different class level, and they just outdid everything that LA could do.
I really think that, for me, the most impressive thing about LA was Cal Peterson. I mean, I was kind of joking last week that they've got no goalie. I expected him to not really save much of anything. But I think Peterson really kept them in this game.
Now, here's a question for you.
Again, we only put two by him.
Yeah. If you're Los Angeles and you're committing to a rebuild, do you trade Jonathan Quick?
At this point, I don't think anyone wants him. And I think coming off such a long injury, I don't know you're going to get much for him. I think there's better pieces to move there.
Yeah, I agree there. It's one of those where I think that you should just hit the dynamite and blow like anybody over the age of 25, just move them all out.
Honestly, if I was LA, I'd be trying. I think the biggest piece they have for sale is Doughty.
Yeah, I agree.
And I could see even doing something with Toronto to move Doughty over there.
Yeah, I agree. Something either Marner or Nylander for.
Well, I was originally thinking that, yeah, they'd get, you know, Nylander for Doughty. I mean, there might be a couple other pieces going, but. I think if you know, once Quick comes back and he's been hurt for so long, I don't think you get much out of him. I think I'd try to move Doughty out of there. Muzzin I'd hang on to. On the forward side, there's not really much anyone's going to want. Nobody's going to want Brown or Toffoli, maybe Carter.
Yeah, maybe Kopitar.
Yeah, even maybe. That. It's I don't know. He's got a 1 year, doesn't he?
Oh, no. I think he's under long-term.
Yeah, you're right. No, I was thinking of... yeah. No, you're right. Kopitar's long-term. Yeah, Kopitar, definitely you can move. Doughty, you can move.
Yeah, I think that with both...
I was thinking Kovalchuk when you said Kopitar.
Yeah. Nobody's going to touch Kovalchuk. No. I think that by the end of the calendar year that he goes back to Russia, frankly.
I don't know. I can see him being a rental at the deadline for somebody.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a reason this Russia experiment's not working. Like, after how many times until the NHL doesn't bite anymore?
Yeah. Well, he was never very good at the defensive side of the game, and his offense has dwindled a bit, and his speed has dwindled a bit, and between that, he's just not able to play at the NHL level, frankly, anymore.
I agree. Well, the last game of the week that was on Sunday, the Calgary Flames went on the road after being here for a quick two-game homestand, and they ended up in the United Center taking on the Blackhawks, where they won 3-2 against the Hawks. Again, a very one-sided game on the shot clock, 41-24. Matt, overall thoughts on this one?
It's a recurring theme this week. It was a very sloppy effort by the Calgary Flames, and they just out-talented Chicago. And... if it wasn't for Mike Smith being, frankly, stellar in that game, the Flames don't come away with 2 points. And it was a fairly horrible game defensively for the team. They didn't give up a ton of shots, but they gave up a ton of high-quality chances. And you just can't do that against any team, let alone a team that has guys like Kane and Taves and all that.
The other thing here was the Flames got, of their four goals, two of them on the power play, which is always a good thing when you can get those special teams going. You've mentioned twice now, and I don't disagree with you, the Flames played kind of sloppy, and you're going to see that over a long 82-game season. But when was the last time we talked about the Flames, you know, out-talenting another team? I think that's really a sign, you know, that this team has turned things around when you start to see, oh yeah, this team is... you know, might not be playing their best hockey every night, but they're still winning games just because they're more talented.
Yeah, it's a nice departure. And we used to see that with Chicago and LA before when they were winning Stanley Cups and that like they'd be playing terribly and yet they'd still come away with 2 points. And the Flames are in that phase right now where they can beat the mediocre teams in the league, and even if they're having a bad day, they can still come away with a point or two. And like even Dallas, they had no business getting a point even in that game. And like they were pretty much terrible this week. And like last week or last year, if this week had happened, we're talking about an 0-3 week. And instead, we got 5 out of 6 points. And that's great. It's just that now the Flames are going up against Columbus, Minnesota, Nashville, and Edmonton this week. Those teams can make you pay if you do dumb stuff. And it's going to be tough for this team to continue any sort of winning momentum if they don't clean up their game significantly.
Though we have seen teams, like you mentioned Chicago in the past, I'm thinking of Pittsburgh as well, where they kind of knew what games they had to be really tight and what games they could be a little sloppy on. You know, and I'm wondering if Calgary, I don't want to say intentionally is that way, but it's like, hey, this is one where we got to hunker down and do this, and other ones where we can be a little more loose or relaxed.
And that could very well be. And We are seeing some very good efforts. Guys like James Neal and Derek Ryan are playing some of their best hockey in a Flames jersey. And like I think Neal, once he actually scores a goal, you'll probably end up seeing him score like 7 goals in 10 games following that. It's just he needs to get the monkey off his back. But it's one of those things that certain players are playing well, others are struggling mightily. But if they can work out the kinks on the fly, then they can avoid a long losing streak. But if they don't, then this upcoming week is not going to be looking too friendly.
Well, we've played 27 games. We have 55 left. I think if we can keep doing this same trajectory, the Flames are going to be fine. Everyone has bad games. Everybody has games they should win, they don't, or they, you know, shouldn't win and they do. But I think in the first 27-game sample, I'm really liking what I see so far.
Yeah, well, frankly, this team should be better in the standings that they are. And
well, like you said, there's things that need to be figured out. If James Neal was doing what James Neal does, we'd be better.
Yeah, exactly. And if Derek Ryan was playing like Derek Ryan does for the first 6 weeks of the season, then we'd also be better off, but now he's finally, the last couple of weeks has been turning around, and it'll be interesting to see. I think that the Flames are poised over like the next 2-3 months to go on a tear and really put some distance between ourselves and the out of playoff teams, but we'll see. There's enough there where it's encouraging. It's just for the short term, they have to tighten up their game significantly.
Before we move away from the Chicago game, I wanted to point out here that Andrew Mangiapane got recalled, played in this game. And for Mangiapane, he played 8 minutes, 53 seconds of ice time. 1 minute of that was on the power play. He had 3 shots on goal, 1 hit, and 1 takeaway. So not bad for a guy playing where he is in the lineup. I know you've been a big Mangiapane fan for years. Your evaluation on him in this game?
I thought he did everything that he needed to do. And you're looking at a player that should be a decent NHL player moving forward. At the start of the year, Dubé was just better. So he got the shot first. And Eat Bread played well in Stockton, and now he's getting a shot.
Yeah, different guys need different things at different times, and you're right. Dubé had a phenomenal off-season, training camp, which really helped him, and I think that's why he got the shot. And, now it's Mangiapane's turn, and when you're on a line with Ryan and Neal, you're hopefully going to look good. You got to try to not look good when you're playing with those guys.
Exactly.
Well, Matt, I think for me, the big story this week, if we look at all those games, is Smitty played 2 in a row and actually looked pretty good doing that. If we look at his stats right now, he's had 16 games played, started all 16 of them, 8 wins, 7 losses, 1 overtime loss for a total of 405 shots against, 46 goals against, 3.0 goals against average, still at that .886 save percentage with one shutout. His stats aren't indicative of the last couple games, but looking at those, I think somebody's starting to turn it around, don't you?
Well, that's why, like, over the last little while, I've been saying, like, he should play the traditional backup role where he gets the weak team, and if he plays well, then you give him a little more and keep seeing if he can work out the kinks. And he got, if you look ahead, like, we're going to be playing some pretty dynamite teams this upcoming week, so the Flames needed Riddick to be fresh and ready for those games, and LA and Chicago are frankly terrible, so you can get by, like, even if Smith struggled in those games, and even if he cost us one of the games, it's like, yeah, not that big of a deal, where if he struggles against one of the better teams, then, you know, he'll be put further behind the eight ball in terms of trying to salvage his season.
And with two weekends of back-to-back games coming up, this week we have Nashville-Edmonton on the 8th, 9th, and then the 15th, 16th, Minnesota-St. Louis. You're going to see both guys getting rotated in, I think, quite frequently in the next couple weeks. But, yeah, I think Smitty's looking good. I think he's maybe returning to form. And after those two games he played in, I think I've got more confidence putting him in against one of the good teams now. What do you think?
Well, I think that this upcoming week, you've got Columbus, Minnesota, and Nashville every other day, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. I think Riddick plays all three. Yeah. And then the Edmonton game, throw Smith in.
Interesting. Why would you go that way?
Riddick's better, and you're playing good teams.
So you think it's more about the workload this year than the, oh, well, Smitty's our starter, right? You've kind of given that starter job to Riddick.
For the time being, like, Smith needs to regain his confidence, and he played very confident against Chicago, and the two goals that they scored on him, those beat most goalies in the league, so it's not a big deal. And even that LA game, the one goal he did give up was kind of on the iffy side, so you need to get him to regain his own confidence in himself, and that takes time. And if you rush it, unfortunately, if he does have, like, say he plays tomorrow against Columbus and he gets shellacked, well, any progress that's been made will have been flushed down the toilet. So
yeah, you could go the other way too, though, and say that if you sit him after two good games, you're losing some of that progress.
True. It's just,
for me, I think I would play him in Columbus after coming off the Chicago game, see what he can do against an Eastern Conference team, and then put whoever the better goalie is against Minnesota and Nashville.
Yeah, I could see doing it that way as well.
You know, I mean, he's a pro. He's a guy who should be able to play a starter load. So, hey, Smitty, you've done two. Show us you can do it against a good team and see what he looks like.
Yeah. Well, the other thing I'm concerned about in that case is Riddick might get a little rusty sitting on the bench, so for a week plus.
Maybe, but I mean, Riddick sat on, yeah, I mean, Riddick had that kind of workload when he was in the AHL.
Yeah.
He had that kind of workload last year for a bit when they gave the net to Gillies.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, yeah.
And even then, it's not like Riddick isn't, you know, on the ice. He's still on the ice, hopefully staying in game shape. I mean, if you're going to be a starter, you got to be ready for those games.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm hopeful that Smith can turn it around, just because of the fact that if Riddick can continue to play at a decent level, you can more evenly balance how much each of them is playing, so that way they'll both be fresh when it comes time for the playoffs.
Yeah, I think what we're going to see if Smitty continues to play, this is not a starter backup, but a 1A, 1B scenario where I don't think we have an established 1A. It's whoever's the better goalie right now gets the 1A minutes.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at the schedule. We have 7 home games, it looks like, and 7 road games this month. You could have a home goalie and a road goalie, just like we have a different alternate captain at home and at the road.
Yeah, that works.
Smitty, you're going to just play all the games on the road because you're looking good there. Riddick, when we're at home, it's your net.
That'd be an interesting thought.
There's your 1A, 1B, right? Because at the end of the year, you play 41 homes and 41 roads.
Yep.
Just bring an emergency guy on the road. You can even leave the other goalie at home. So after this week, if we take a look, the Calgary Flames now after 27 games have 16 wins, 9 losses, 2 overtime losses for a total of 34 points, which puts them 4th in the Western Conference, 1st in the Pacific Division at 34, tied right now with Winnipeg for that 3rd spot in the West. Looking at this, Matt, I was looking back at shows from last year and that. When was the last time you and I were sitting here in early December feeling good about this team?
Not ever.
Like, this is usually...
Not since we've been doing this.
This is usually...
Like, when I was a kid and, like, the Flames were still a playoff team in the early 90s, then, yeah, sure, but since then, no, not at all.
Late November is usually where we've either gone on a big win streak or a big losing streak. I was looking back, and it seems like we're usually going about 4 or 5 games winning or 4 or 5 games losing late November, early December.
Yeah.
You know, there's been times that we've been high in the standings, but it's like, quick, enjoy it. It's going to be over next week as soon as these guys start losing. And I like that this year we're seeing, we're losing, but we're way above 500, 16-9. This team is looking good, and I don't necessarily want to tip them for the Stanley Cup yet, but, you know, it's nice to see the Flames sitting atop the Pacific Division. That's not something we're used to.
Well, you also look at the fact that, like, our division is frankly terrible. Like, Anaheim's close to us in points, but if you look at their goal differential, they're terrible. And they've been just kind of on the luckier side with a lot of loser points and comebacks. But the thing is that with Calgary being, frankly, more talented than pretty much everybody in our division, only I think San Jose could be argued to be close, is that with how the playoff structure works, the Pacific basically plays itself. So Calgary has a very decent shot of advancing all the way to the Western Conference Finals just due to how the playoff structure works out. And
well, that was the next thing I was going to ask you. If you look at the top 8 in the playoff structure, who are you afraid of?
Nobody in our division.
I think San Jose would be a tough series. I'm not afraid of Anaheim
beatable.
For once, but yeah, San Jose, we could do it.
Yeah, like you look at like the second round of the playoffs, you're either going to face Anaheim or San Jose at this point. Like, I don't see maybe Vegas, maybe, but I don't see anybody that's particularly spectacular. The first round, like, if the Flames win the division, then you're going to be probably playing one of the central teams in round one, because I think 5 of their teams will end up making it.
Anybody in the central scare you?
They're beatable.
Yeah, when you look at it as a 7-game series, I think we can beat Colorado in 7. I think we can beat Winnipeg in 7. I think we could struggle with Dallas if they were there, but we could do it. I think Nashville and San Jose would be the toughest series.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think depending on what order you get them in, it's sort of like in the past where, you know, the Ducks have beaten us up so badly that even if we were to go on, you know, you can't continue. Yeah. I think San Jose could do that to us this year, and we just have to play. I mean, the issue you and I have seen in the past, the Ducks start playing chippy, the Flames get into it, get off their game, and lose the games. Right, that's been the story the last couple of playoff rounds. So I think if the Flames keep playing their hockey, they can definitely beat San Jose. I think that it would be a really fun series to watch them against the Predators.
I agree.
I don't know if we'd win it necessarily, but I think it'd be a fun series.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting in the Eastern Conference. The 3 best teams are all in the Atlantic again, so after round 1, one of those is done, and then after round 2, 2 of them are done. So
we just kind of wait for the Eastern to eat itself.
Yeah.
And
like, how would you say, with how the playoff structure is now, it's a lot easier for teams that are in perhaps weaker divisions to go on a run, just because of the fact that the teams in their division are kind of terrible. And they can get all the way to the conference finals rather easily. Like, if you look last year, Vegas didn't really have a hard time in either of the first or second round. And so they were fresh going up against Winnipeg, who had to go through that nasty Central Division. And they were beat up by then, and Vegas still had their legs and just won. And it's possible for a team to go all the way to the finals just due to the fact that their division is terrible.
Well, and the other interesting thing is at the Board of Governors meetings today, it was announced that if Seattle comes in, Arizona will move to Central and Seattle into Pacific. So now we got two expansion teams in Edmonton. Like, you know, that just, to me, dilutes the Pacific even more.
Oh, I know. And Vancouver is kind of borderline as well, and LA is now going into rebuild mode. So it's like, you'll have four teams that are basically write-offs for the next handful of seasons right off the hop. And by default, if you're not one of those four teams, then, hey, you've got a good chance at making the playoffs.
I would not be surprised this year if Edmonton makes it in just because other teams are terrible.
Frankly, I'd be shocked if Edmonton makes it just due to the fact that...
I think Vegas is going to falter.
Frankly, I expect five of the teams in the Central to make it. Like, the five that are currently in, Minnesota, Dallas, Winnipeg, Colorado, Nashville, I expect all five of those guys to be in. So I think it'll just be us, Anaheim, and San Jose from the Pacific.
Yeah, we'll see. It'll be interesting to see. But yeah, it's nice to see us at the top of the division.
I could see Vegas possibly squeaking in, and I don't... as good as McDavid is, he can't single-handedly get the Oilers a playoff spot, and I don't think... Like, their whole team is kind of mediocre.
I think whether it's Vegas or Edmonton, if they make it, they're one and done.
Oh yeah, for sure. They're cannon fodder for Nashville or Calgary in round one.
Another player I wanted to talk about this week, we were talking about Smitty, is... Oliver Shillington, who has drawn into lineup. Juuso Välimäki is currently on the injury reserve, and so they made a call-up. And we talked about Shillington recently and how good he's been doing in the AHL. So Shillington's now played four games. He played on the 25th against Arizona, the 28th against Dallas, the 30th against LA, and the 2nd against Chicago. So far, he has no points. He's even on plus-minus. Pretty much the only thing he's got is one shot, but he's not being brought in to be an offensive defenseman. Matt, from the four games we've seen so far, you and I are both a fan of his. What do you think of number 58?
He still needs to work on his defensive game. His offensive instincts are excellent, and he's made some fairly tough plays in the offensive zone, especially with like threading passes through to his defense partner in coverage and all that kind of stuff, and he's done a fairly good job of transitioning the puck up the ice. But his problem was never really the offensive side of the puck. He's always been a fairly talented offensive defenseman. For the first three games, I thought he was decent or okay defensively, but that game against Chicago, he was borderline terrible. And
yeah, but it wasn't just him.
True. And, like, he was responsible for the Taze goal. But, as you said, that was kind of everybody having a bit of a sloppy game.
And you and I have talked about that, too. I mean, if we go back, how many goals have Anderson or Välimäki, you know, been the cause of? They're rookies, right? And we talked about how this... we talked about it with Anderson and with Juuso. This is a great learning experience for them. And that's going to happen when you put rookies in
your lineup. Sure. And, like, I hearken back to when TJ Brody was coming into the league. Because he was about this...
Good old number 66.
Yeah, Mario Lemieux. No, he was a very similar prospect to to Shillington. In that when he was drafted, he was very good offensively, but kind of lost defensively. I think that you'll see a similar trajectory for Shillington in that once he gets comfortable playing defensively at the NHL level, he will be fine. It's just that he's a rookie, and there are going to be games where you're going, what are you doing, dude?
So here's my thought. Tell me what you think of this. We've got Shillington in the lineup now. He's on the third pairing with Anderson. I think of the three rookies, Shillington, Anderson, Valimaki, to me, Anderson looks the most seasoned. But what would you think about when Valimaki comes back, leaving Shillington up here and sending Valimaki down, sort of, you know, rotating those guys in and out, sort of like they did with Dubé, of send Valimaki down, work on some parts of his game, leave Shillington up here, and maybe swap him again later on?
I think that on the overall, Valimaki's the better defenseman, so I'd probably send Shillington back down. But you could make a case either way. I wouldn't be in a rush to get Valimaki back, though. Like, let him heal fully and then bring him back, not, like, rushing him because, like, well, oh, Shillington's horrible. We gotta get Valimaki back.
For sure, but even I think Valimaki's week to week right now. So even if, let's say, he's out till the end of the month, I mean, that's a lot of hockey to miss for a young guy. I could almost see them send him down like a conditioning stint of saying, hey, go down there, you know, show us you should come back here and we'll bring you back.
Well, I would kind of expect him back around the middle of the month just because he's already been out for, I think, a week and a half. And so usually that type of injury that he had, if I recall correctly, it's a knee injury. It, usually 3 to 4 weeks, maybe a little longer. So probably the middle of the month, give or take.
Well, I mean, we have a 4-day break around Christmas. I wouldn't be surprised if they just let him heal up and come back on the 27th against Winnipeg.
Yeah, that's possible.
But it's, you know, it's a nice problem to have that our bottom three defensemen are all rookies and they're all looking great. And it's like, well, who do we keep? How many GMs around the league would love to do that?
I know. Oh, darn. We have too many good defensemen. You know, like, gee, such a hard travesty to endure, you know?
Well, and it's really going to be interesting. And we don't have to get into this today, but, you know, at some point the Flames are going to have to make some room and clear some money, especially for something like the Tkachuk deal. And a defenseman's going to have to go at some point. And when you look at our, you know, our six guys playing on the blue line, it's going to be a tough choice.
Oh, I'm looking at that expansion draft, and I almost think that you have to expose Giordano at the
I don't know. Giordano seems like a fine wine. He's getting better as he ages.
I know. It's really tough.
Well, the guys in TSN were saying today they don't think that we'll see Seattle come until 2021. So, you know, we get, I don't know if we're going to get three more great seasons out of Gio. Maybe we'll feel different by 2021.
True. And, you know, at least the Flames have four good young defensemen that, and along with Hamonic and Brody, to allow the team to transition away from Giordano moving forward, that we'll have a good group for like the next 7-8 years, and we can be patient and like draft some more guys in the coming years to try and like rebuild the prospect pool so we'll have replacements down the road.
Well, I mean, just looking at the defense, you're talking about the expansion draft, but if you kind of look at them, I don't think Gio gets traded unless, say, it's an expansion draft piece. You know, I don't think Hanifin's going anywhere. You don't want to move the young kids, so really you're down to Hamonic and Brody. And as much as I hate to say it, because Brody's looking good right now, sometimes you got to sell while you're up.
If they came to that, that would be fine.
You know, and I wouldn't be surprised if the Flames, I think the odd man out, just looking at it, is going to end up being Hamonic.
Yeah.
We'll see. No rush to make a move, but I think Hamonic, just my gut is he might be the guy on his way out. But we'll see how Hanifin progresses this season.
Yeah, it's one of those things that we're kind of in that weird spot where we have four defensemen under the age of 22, and defensemen usually don't really start getting good until they're 24, 25. So it's a bit of a question mark, really, with all of them on what exactly you have. Like, you take a guy like Dion Phaneuf, he comes out of the gate, great, but that was as good as he ever was. Like, is this the best that we're seeing from guys like Anderson? Maybe. Could happen.
But even then, somebody needs to play in your bottom six.
True. But,
or your bottom three, I guess, in D.
But we need to just see how each of these guys progress. I wouldn't make much of any trades or anything with the defense for another year or so. Like, when the expansion draft comes, then perhaps look at moving somebody. But I kind of just let things go as they are right now.
Yeah, the only thing is we might need some cash, depending on what we plan to do in the offseason. I mean, Tkachuk's looking more and more expensive every day.
I'm already kind of penciling him in at, like, 7.5. So
right now we got, what, $2 million left?
Yeah, well, you get rid of Smith and Stone, you bring, say...
You could get rid of Frolik if you need to.
Like, Smith and Stone, that's $7 million right there. And, you know, that's without guys like Frolik that you could easily trade, or, you know, there's a whole bunch of guys that you could easily trade to make room. So it's one of those where you just have to wait and see.
Well, talking about trades, the Flames made a trade this week. Nothing that's as exciting as the ones we're talking about, but the last vestige of the Jerome Iginla trade is on its way out of town. The Flames traded Morgan Klimchuk, their Stockton forward, to the Toronto Maple Leafs for Andrew Nielsen. And for those that don't know about Nielsen, he was drafted by the Leafs in 2015 in the third round. He's a slow, stay-at-home type of defenseman, left shot, that you don't normally see around the league very often. He most likely won't make it to the Flames roster this year. He had a breakout year 2 years ago for Lethbridge of the WHL that earned him some recognition in the prospect pool. Since then, he struggled to stay consistent with the Marlies, but, I mean, he's a big kid. He's 6'4". He's played in 152 AHL games. He has 20 goals, 70 points, and 237 penalty minutes. So he's going to Stockton, and I think that, you know, especially with so many high-end prospects, this will just be a guy who gets lost in the shuffle there, but probably a needed piece.
Well, I was actually a fan of Nielsen when he was drafted, and it was one of those guys where if he could skate well, he'd be a really good player. But he was slower than molasses.
He's not immobile. He's not like Keenan Kanzig, but his skating could definitely be improved.
Like, he has a really good shot, and he's a decent enough offensive defenseman. Like, he has decent instincts. It's just that because he's slow, it's hard for him to be in position all the time. He's inconsistent, and it's frustrating because talent-wise, if he could figure out the skating and similarly work on defensive aspects of his game, he could be an NHL player. It's just...
Well, that's why you're in the NHL, right?
It's a project, and frankly...
But so is Klimchuk.
True. I think that there's more higher-end potential with Nielsen than with Klimchuk, but I think, honestly, this is a non-NHL for non-NHL type trade, and we just need an AHL defenseman, so hey, great, awesome.
Nielsen's from Red Deer, for those that are interested, so a boy from close to here. One thing I did notice about Nielsen, I've been watching some footage of him in both the dub and in the AHL, he seems to be really good at forcing turnovers, which you generally see from that type of defenseman. But, yeah, in the end, I think we're essentially trading for the forward version of Klimchuk for the defenseman version of Klimchuk. I think Klimchuk's not going to make, especially now with Nylander signed, there's no way you make Toronto's roster this year. I think both these guys are project players. But Nielsen's only 22, and I'm not saying they can fix him necessarily, but I think that there's still some time on a player like that. I mean, you were mentioning earlier guys start playing their best by 25. From what I've seen of Nielsen, I don't know if he's going to be a top six, but I could see him eventually being our number 7.
Yeah, like one guy that I thought would be a decent comparable to is Derek Englund, where, because like Englund had a very good shot at times, he just didn't, he had a long windup and that's why he didn't score much, but it took him a long time to put all the parts of his game together, and he eventually became a very good two-way, well, more defensively minded, but he could pass fairly well, player, and he made a career out of it. And I think with Nielsen, you're going to see that, like, if he does make the NHL, it's going to take him a while to iron out all the kinks, and he'll eventually get there if he does work on those things. It's just, can he get there? And most don't. And I think, like, another comparable would be Dalton Prout. Another guy with a decent shot, but is kind of just iffy in every other aspect.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, we could say Sambo Klimchuk, right? He probably wasn't a guy who we were looking to make the NHL, so we're trading an AHL piece for an AHL piece.
Yeah, like, I don't even think Klimchuk cracks the Kings right now. So, like, it's one of those situations where Klimchuk is just a decent middle six AHL guy, and...
Well, so far he's played two games in Toronto and has 2 points, 2 goals. So, looking good down there so far. Nielsen is still awaiting a visa, so he hasn't joined Stockton yet. I believe he's still practicing with the Flames.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, sort of, I don't want to use the word lost cause because that doesn't sound great, but sort of lost cause for lost cause. Guy that maybe didn't live up to expectations in Klimchuk, for a guy who didn't live up to expectations in Nielsen, and it's... pretty much, you know, farmhand for farmhand.
Yeah, it's like if the guy, whichever guy makes the NHL out of the two, then hey, great, you got something for him. We weren't going to, so have fun. And it's one of those situations where hopefully one of us gets a good player out of the deal, and we'll see.
Well, and I've said this before, somebody's got to play in the AHL. You know, like, you can't have all your guys there eventually be NHL guys. There's got to be some farmhands. And I could see this team keeping Nielsen around for a while, like they have with Josh Healy and guys like that, simply to be a farmhand.
Yeah, well, the Flames have nothing on defense now that Shillington's up. So their prospect pool, Nielsen is the next best guy. So,
yeah.
Which that's kind of pathetic, and why the Flames need to draft a bunch of defensemen over the next couple of years, because we don't have anybody.
Well, we do, but we're graduating them.
Yeah, I know.
All three of our guys we have are ready to graduate.
I know. Which
we just need a draft in the next couple of years. Like, we haven't drafted in the top 100 last year.
I know. And that's where, like, the Flames need to use a first or a second or a third round pick on some defensemen just to...
We just need to use a first or a second or a third round pick, period.
True.
I think we need a defenseman, a goalie. There's lots of things we got to go after with those picks.
I know. It's like going to the grocery store. Okay, I need this and this and this.
We
and
have
that.
Enough veterans. Keep your picks.
Yeah.
You know, if anything, move a veteran to try and grab somebody's pick. But
the only thing, like at the trade deadline, the only thing I think that the Flames really could use is your middle six playmaker guy that's always available, like when the Oilers traded Alex Hemsky.
Oh. Yeah, I don't know. I want to go shopping at the deadline, though, looking at the prices that well, Seth gets.
I'm not even talking like a top tier guy. Like, you know, like I would spend like a third and a fifth, maybe.
This year, I want to. I don't know. I want to keep as many picks as we can this year. If you can acquire another third, maybe, but I don't want to be moving picks out if we can avoid it this year.
If you could get somebody that's a decent third-line playmaker guy for a third or a fourth or something like that, sure, why not?
Let's wait and see how the lineup shakes out, because if Neil and Ryan come around and Jankowski comes around, I don't think we'll need that.
I know. It's one of those things that, if need be, like, that's about the only thing on the shopping list for deadline reasons that I think that the Flames could use. Like, if the goaltending sorts itself out over the next
couple
weeks.
Well, that's
what
I was going to say. Hopefully we're not shopping for a goalie, because those are pricey.
Yeah. Hey, Jonathan Quick, you're not busy.
I'd rather take a shot on McElhaney.
Yeah. Henrik Lundqvist, hey, your team's kind of supposed to be rebuilding.
Well, we talked about a guy getting called up in Shillington, but we also had a player sent down. Dylan Dubé, as you and I have talked about, got sent down to the AHL last Thursday. He joined Stockton and played there over the weekend. He recorded 3 assists over the weekend and now has points in 5 of his last 6 American League games dating back to last season. He was paired with fellow rookies Glenn Godden and Matthew Phillips. I'm glad they put him with Phillips, because you remember the magic those two had together at rookie camp.
Yeah. And so, it's good for him, and it's good for him to get confidence back in his offensive game, because he almost looked at times like he was trying too hard to do everything, and he wasn't relaxed. And
well, we see that with rookies, right? You're trying to make an impression. You're trying to show who you are. I think you've got to, and this is why I'm a big advocate, as you know, of guys going to the AHL first. Go down there, establish who you are, and then get called up on those merits versus, you know, who you were in junior.
Yeah. And, like, everybody's different. Like, some guys can step in like Tkachuk did and be fine. It's just that that's more the exception.
There's always an exception to the rule, right?
Yeah.
But I would look at it more as an exception than a rule. I mean, Stamkos, you know, those kind of guys, Tkachuk, they don't need to go down. But I still believe even a Bennett would have done well down there.
Yeah, but he's figuring it out now, so, which that's good.
So hopefully we will see Dubé back this season if he does well. I don't see any need to call him up very soon. I think you can leave him there as long as you need to. There's other guys that can fill the spot. But the one thing I am kind of confused about is Ryan Lomberg. To me, him and Hathaway play the exact same role. We don't need both of them on the lineup. You need one or the other.
I'm fine with that. Just, you know, he's more the 13th forward in my book, so having Lomberg up, it's okay.
We just have so many guys like Quine and, you know, Buddy Robinson and all these sort of veteran tweener guys we got in the offseason. I would be more likely to bring one of those guys up, I think.
Well, I think, no, they don't need waivers unless they're up for a while. I don't know.
10 games.
Yeah.
Or 30 days.
Yeah. Lomberg's fine, and
I think the other thing this might do is let the Flames pick one. I don't think you need both of them in your pro, you know, roster. So at the end of the season, you either move forward with Lomberg or Hathaway.
Well, also, and this is going to sound a little odd, it's good that they're rewarding Lomberg with ice time. And for an odd reason, it's a recruiting tool. You look at free agents in, like, the various, like, NCAA or USHL teams, or even overseas, if you want a guy to sign with you, you need to be able to show that, hey, if you play well, you get recalled and you'll be able to play in the NHL. And Lomberg has been doing everything that's asked of him in Stockton, so he's getting rewarded with some ice time. And we see that with Hathaway, we saw that with Riddick. And I think that by having these guys getting opportunities, you can go to them and say that, you know, if you're playing well and keeping up that your end of the bargain, we'll make room for you. And I think that that'll be helpful, especially moving forward, because the Flames are going to need prospects in the organization, that having a guy like Lomberg right now, it's not a significant thing for the team. Lomberg's not going to affect anything positively or negatively in terms of, you know, winning or losing a game. So by having him there, though, that, like, the Galata kid, the goaltender from development camp, that might be one of the things that tips the scale in our favor. It's a small thing, but it might just be enough. And if that causes a player to come to Calgary instead of somewhere else, then having Lomberg up here for a bit, hey, awesome.
Yeah, no, you're right. It seemed like an odd recall to me, but at the same time, probably also the least disruptive to Stockton. You know, if you pull up a guy, I'm just looking at the stats here, like Alan Quine has 19 points, Tyler Graelvac has 15, Buddy Robinson has 11. You move those guys up, and it's quite disruptive to the lineup. Lomberg had 6, so that's an easy call-up to make.
Yeah.
And I guess I was just surprised him over Peluso. Like, we've kind of got those three guys that play the same role, Hathaway, Peluso, Lomberg, pick one and go with them.
I agree. And, like, intrinsically, it makes sense what you're saying. It's just that I'm also looking at the other side of the coin of, hey, maybe we might be able to get some more free assets out of the deal. So,
yeah, I guess if you're looking at it that way, though, you might as well call Spencer Foe up.
And I think that he will get recalled at some point as well. Like, if he continues to play well down there, then by all means, come on up.
Well, Matt, we're talking about Stockton. Their busiest month in the regular season is behind them. They had 13 games in November, including 8 road tilts, and they went 7-6. As we turn to December, Stockton's in the midst of their longest homestand of the season, a 6-gamer that began Friday with a 4-2 win over the Ontario Reign and a 6-4 loss to the San Jose Barracuda on Saturday. Remember that these guys play a lot of back-to-backs in the A, not uncommon there. Friday night's win was marked by another strong outing from the unsuspecting star, Nick Schneider, who backstopped the Heat to a victory with 27 saves and 29 total shots. On Saturday night, Stockton's struggles continued against their North California rivals, against Stockton. They just can't beat Stockton. They've won only one in 6 of their games this season against the Barracuda. But some names that we were just talking about made their presence known. Offensively for Stockton, Spencer Foo started to find his stride with 3 goals. He's now second on the team with 8 tallies. And Dubé, as we talked about, played with Godden and Phillips. Those 3 speedy forwards created scoring chances all weekend. I actually watched the game. Nice to see them there. And got rewarded with 3 assists for Dubé. Also, Kirby Reichel got 1 goal, 1 assist. So Reichel's heating up too. So good to see some, you know, you wouldn't call Reichel or Alan Quine, who did pretty well, top prospects. But good to see they're starting to put it together. That team looked kind of a mess at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, well, that's why the Flames brought all those guys in, so that way Stockton would be a good team, and hopefully, like, if the Flames ran into injury troubles where, like, say 3 or 4 forwards went out, you could bring in a guy like Rajovac or Quine or whomever, and they'd be able to play fourth line minutes effectively at the NHL level, and it's good to see that Foo has 8 goals now, and that's what I was meaning. Like, if, say, we get another injury to right wing, I think that he'd get recalled. But
yeah,
it's one of those things that, especially moving forward, like, because Calgary is going to be drafting in the last half of each round for probably the next 7 or 8 years. If things don't, like, screw up, they're going to have a hard time getting higher-end talent into the organization. And we saw with Chicago, when they were at their peak, like, they got guys like Panarin to come and sign with them just because they were so good. And I think that with Calgary having, like, you look on the defense and the forward ranks, like, Dubé's good, Mangiapane's good, and Fu's alright, but even up front, the Flames don't really have a ton of...
Well, that's what happens when you don't draft.
Yeah, exactly. Like, some of the prospects that we just drafted are doing well this year, but that's still irrelevant until, like, a year or two from now. If they keep progressing, then maybe they might turn into something, but there's plenty of opportunities. And especially, like, as the Flames transition away from guys like Frolik, where you're going to need a new guy to come in, or if you lose a Jankowski in the expansion draft, just as an example, like, you're going to need guys to come up and fill those spots, and, like, the Flames really don't have any higher-end depth at all.
Yeah, but
up front or on the blue line, and which
but I would argue that they have a couple years to find that. I mean, even if they had one now, there's not a lot of space in the lineup for that guy.
True, but at least by having that lack of competition, it allows those guys to be able to stand out in the farm team, so that way that, oh, hey, Foo has 8 goals, let's get him up here. And you know what I mean? Like, it's just like why, like, the Flames traded Adam Fox, because the Flames had Valimaki, Shillington, and Anderson, and Hamilton, who was young. Like, there's just not enough spots, and I don't think that Fox would have ended up signing with Calgary just because there was too much competition. And now Calgary doesn't really have any competition, not really, at the farm league level.
But I think this is a common problem of successful teams.
Oh, I agree. I
mean, you know, you look at teams like Detroit, who for years were a top team. You look at Chicago. You know, you look at even Pittsburgh. I mean, any top team, they have that issue. And you have to draft smart, but you also, for those guys, have to play the free agent pool really well.
Yeah, but at least now that Calgary is in a position where they can attract those type of guys. And having guys like Lomberg, previously guys like Juris come up, that does nothing but help to sell the team, basically, to free agents of, hey, sign here, we'll give you a shot if you play well.
Well, I mean, if you want to go back, you can say that about our captain, too.
Yeah, exactly.
So if we look at Stockton right now for points leaders, Reichel and Quine are tied for the lead with 19 points. Reichel's got 11 goals and 8 assists, where Quine's got 6 goals, 13 assists. Lazar's number 3 at 17 points. Then we've got Grajovac at 15, Fu at 14, Mangiapane and Shillington also at 14. So I guess 14 is that magic number to get called up. Godden's 11, Buddy Robinson's 11. Those are the top point getters in Stockton. Interesting looking at this for points per game. The guy who has the most points per game right now of significance is Alan Quine, who's got 1.27 points per game. Dubé's on there, but that's because he's only played 2 games. But again, you know, that filler sort of plugger guy in Quine doing really well in the AHL.
Yep.
So probably best to keep him there for right now.
Oh, for sure. And I don't think that you'll see any of the veteran guys get called up unless the Flames run into significant, like, 4 or 5 injuries at the same time.
If Stockton's out, I could see them all being the black aces for the playoffs.
I agree.
Just bring up some bodies, the guys that sort of have sort of been around for a while.
Yep.
Well, Matt, let's look ahead to December, shall we?
Definitely.
We're into the first week of December. The Flames have played 1 game. If you take a look at the schedule, they're pretty much playing every other this month. They've got games on the 4th, 6th, 8th, 9th, 12th, 15th, 16th, 18th, 20th, 22nd, 27th, 29th, and 31st. It looks like 7 at home, 7 on the road. And it's kind of interesting. They're all in 2 or 3 game chunks, so they're not at home or on the road for any great length. We've got Chicago, which we played, in Columbus on the road. Then we come back for 2. We go to Edmonton, which isn't much of a road trip. Come back for Philly. Go on the road for Minnesota, St. Louis, Dallas. Come home for Tampa Bay and St. Louis. The Flames take a 4-day break, 23rd, 24th, 25th, 26th for Christmas. And then not too far to go for Winnipeg on the 27th. Then they're back to finish off the month against Vancouver and San Jose in the Saddle Dome. Overall, what do you think of looking at this month with these teams?
Well, there's...
I think it's the toughest month they've had yet.
Well, they have 7 games against good teams. Like, they play a pair against Minnesota, they got Columbus, Nashville, Tampa, Winnipeg, and San Jose. Like, those are all upper-tier talent teams. You also have Dallas, who's right there. And then they've got some weaker teams like Philadelphia, Edmonton, St. Louis twice, Vancouver. So they can, if they basically beat the teams that they should beat and go .500 against the good teams, they should be fine. But it's going to be a lot. This will kind of give you more of an indication of, is this team a contending team, or is this a good team in a bad division? And I think that if they can, of the 14 games, if they can win 9 or 10 of them, you're looking at more of a contending caliber of team. If they're .500, that's okay, and if they're below .500, then that's not good at all.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good way to look at it. I think if we look back at October, I mean, you never really know what to expect against teams in October, but a lot of Eastern Conference opponents in October, a lot of insignificant Western Conference opponents. November shaped out to be a lot more Western teams and games of consequence. And I look at December the same way. I mean, you know, between Chicago, Nashville, Minnesota both times, Dallas, Winnipeg, San Jose, like, there's some games that I think are going to be of consequence here, and games that at the end of the season we could look back and say, if we would have won in December, if we don't, it could change our fortunes.
Yeah, and like, if you look ahead to next month, even I'm flashing forward a bit, we play a lot of Eastern teams. Like, there's 7 games against Eastern teams and only 4 against Western teams. So, you know, like, this is a bit of a make-or-break month in terms of just due to the fact that we're playing better teams overall and the games are more consequential.
The biggest thing I think for the Flames taking away from this month is they've got to establish who their starter is.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that by the end of this month, I think that either Riddick or Smith will, you'll run with one of those guys for, like, say, 2/3 of the games moving forward. Or if they both falter, then it's okay, we have a couple months before the trade deadline, let's find somebody.
Well, I honestly think, I mean, there's a trade freeze and stuff in there, but I really think that by the end of the month, you've got to have a goaltender, whether it's, you know, Smith, Riddick, or an outside hire.
Yeah. And what's with all the afternoon games? So, like, there's 3 this month, 1 more next month.
Well, it's weird. Like, if you look at it, so we're on the 3rd right now when we record. We've got, you know, our usual 5 p.m., 7 p.m., 8 p.m. starts. But then as we get into the 15th and 16th, they've got an 11:30 a.m. against Minnesota on the 15th, and then a 1 p.m. the next day, and then a 2 p.m. against St. Louis that same weekend. There's a lot of really weird start times this month. I don't know if maybe there's a different provider in the States, or hockey's being relegated because of football. I'm not sure.
Yeah, like, there's 2 in February as well, so there's 6 more day games.
But we haven't done too bad in the day games so far.
It's just weird, because, like, I remember in years past, like, we'd have, like, maybe 3 a year, so, and we've already had a bunch already. It's just odd, that's all.
You know, I'm looking at this year's schedule compared to last year's. Do you remember last year, the weird schedule?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You know, we played twice against Eastern teams, and we were burning those games, like, the same week. It'd be, like, home to Tampa Bay, 3 more games, away to Tampa Bay, see ya. And now we see them, like, December and February, so this looks more like a regular NHL schedule than we've seen in a while. What was it, 2 years ago? We burned half our games against Edmonton in the first week.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, especially for a rivalry like Edmonton and Vancouver, it's good to stretch those out through the season.
Yeah. And, like, if you look at, I'm just looking ahead at the rest of the Flames schedule, like, February is also a bit of an easier month in terms of opponents. Like, we play San Jose once, Tampa once, Pittsburgh, and then the rest of the teams are kind of middling to bad, so the Flames could make some hay over the next 2 months if they're in a good spot at the end of this month.
The other thing, if you look at this schedule, if we're looking ahead, there's really no long road trips.
No.
Like, the furthest I can see is a 4-game road trip. You know, we're not doing the, like, 7-game, 8 games on the road. And even when we have home stands, like you'll see in in March, this team has pretty much 8 games in 8 games at home, but then they make a quick trip to Winnipeg or a quick trip to Vancouver. Like, it's not any road games of significance there.
Yeah, and we play 10 home games in March out of the 15.
Yeah.
And one's a quick back-to-back Vegas, Arizona, like we've already done. And at the end of the month against San Jose. So, like, it's just odd, that's all. We do another California trip right at the end of the month and into April. But
looking at this season, I think when we look back, make or break, December could be that month that we say, this is the month that really made this team, or this is the month that really broke this team.
Well, frankly, like, if you look January on, the schedule's kind of weak, frankly. Like, if you look at March,
if we can put up points this month, it could put us in a really good spot.
Well, like, if you look at March, you got Minnesota, Toronto. Those are 2 good games off the start. Then Vegas twice, Arizona. Those are kind of middling teams. New Jersey, New York, another couple of middling teams. 2 against Winnipeg, Columbus. Those are good. Then Ottawa, Vancouver, LA, Dallas, those guys all suck. Arizona and then San Jose at the end. Like, it's a very light schedule. Like, I think the Flames pretty much have played most of their difficult opponents already.
Well, and we even end the season against LA, Anaheim, Edmonton.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to... It's early in the season still. We're not even at the halfway point. I don't want to say who's in and who's out or what games will be easy. But I think with the nice thing about having, like, this month with games every other day, there is a lot of hockey, but there's not... And with, you know, trips like we have, or we have two days or 4 days at home, there's time for the guys to get rest. And I think down the stretch, that's where the Flames need to manage things. They don't have a lot of extra bodies for injury. But, you know, I think if they can make it through this month, they can put up enough points that when the injury bug does hit us in February or March, we'll still be ahead.
Yeah, for sure.
Because it will hit. Well, Matt, looking ahead to December, should we talk about the next week of games?
For sure.
Last week, we made some predictions. I predicted that we would win in LA and Chicago, lose to Dallas. You predicted a more optimistic view and thought we'd win all three. And we, in fact, won in LA and Chicago and lost to Dallas. So my crystal ball was, I guess, less foggy than yours.
Well, we split the difference. We got 5 out of 6 points.
Still a good week either way.
Yeah,
right?
Can't complain.
So this week we got 4 games on tap. One of the rare weeks where we've had 4. I think the last time was the week of October 22nd that we played 4 games. Otherwise, it's been 3 games, I think, every week. We have the Flames on the road on Tuesday against Columbus. Then they come back for a 2-game home streak to play Minnesota and Nashville. And then they're on the road again against Edmonton. And it's, if you haven't gone to see the Flames yet this year, make sure you do that. It's fun to see them when they're winning. They're a good team this year. It's fun to be there. And the Dome's not selling out, so you can get tickets for pretty cheap. And the best place to get those tickets is at SeatGiant, seatgiant.ca. They offer some of the best prices on hockey tickets. I was actually on there earlier today, Matt. Found tickets for the Minnesota game in the second level for $42 a ticket, which means that guy's losing money on those tickets.
Yeah, it's good. Like, that's a good deal.
Tickets in the lower bowl for $90 a ticket. So if you want to go this week to a game or even looking ahead, great gift for Flames fans. We got a ton of home games in January and February. Buy those tickets now for games in the future. We talked about some of the easy games Matt was mentioning earlier where you can probably see hopefully a guaranteed win, knock on wood. Go to SeatGiant, buy your tickets for yourself, for a gift, for a loved one or a friend. And when you go there, enter the promo code FIRESIDE so they know that we sent you. So Matt, with those 4 games, 2 at home, 2 on the road, what are your predictions for the week?
With how the Flames played this week, I'm going to be a downer and say 2 points.
Which two?
Minnesota.
And you think losses and all the others?
Yeah. They need...
Why do you...
They were... Frankly, they should have lost all 3 of the games this week based on how they were playing. And if they continue to play sloppy like that, that now that they're playing some teams that can actually do some damage, they're going to bite it hard if they don't straighten things out.
I think the Flames will split this week. I think they're going to put Smitty in net against Columbus, and I think that's going to cause them some issues. I think that they'll win the... I think Columbus and Nashville, they'll lose. Minnesota and Edmonton, they'll lose. I think, again, Smitty will go in against Columbus. That might cost them the game there. I think that the Minnesota game, they can win coming back to the Dome. Nashville's a good team. I don't think Calgary will be able to beat them. And then Edmonton, I think they're going to win. So I'm going to split the week 2-2. And then after that, the next week, we've got Philly, which is, I don't know, we don't see enough of Philly to even know what to expect there. But we'll talk about that next week.
They have Brian Elliott in net. We know exactly what to expect with Philly.
They've got no GM. Did they fire their coach yet?
Well, there's talk that they've hired Chuck Fletcher, so Minnesota's former general manager. And I'd kind of already be penciling in Joel Quenneville into the coaching spot, but...
You know, I don't know. If I were Joel, I'd sit home with my money and wait for Seattle.
Yeah.
I don't think Quenneville's got any reason to go to a losing team right now. The only thing, you know, I think the next challenge for him would be to go to a team like Seattle. You're getting paid to sit at home. Why not?
Yeah, true enough.
And what's a winning coach like that going to gain going to the Flyers?
A new challenge, I guess.
Well, yeah, but I don't know. It's like going to Edmonton. Well,
it's like
Babcock. Do there.
It's like Babcock when he went to Toronto. Like, the Leafs were freaking terrible when he was there initially, but he knew that they were going to eventually sort things out. And the Flyers were terrible and have been and are going to be for probably another year or two. But if Quenneville wants a challenge, then he can grow with the team as they move forward.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. I wouldn't be surprised if he's announced as the first coach for Seattle.
I wouldn't be shocked either.
Another reason I think the Flames will lose in Columbus, it's been announced that Zarnik and Prout are both going to be in the lineup. So anytime you've got Dalton Prout on your blue line, you know you're putting out a winning lineup.
Well, it was nice of them to put him in just because his dad's there.
Is that why it's going to happen? Yep.
That's why I'm kind of thinking that Riddick plays just for that reason.
Because his dad's there too? He's just tour his dad with the team, and then he'll get 50 of the next 55 games. And
yep.
Oh, my dad came here. He can't get home. His passport got lost. I guess he just has to tour with us. Ashley, speaking of which, looking at that next, you were mentioning the next road trip to Vegas. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the mom's or the dad's game.
Yeah, probably.
Because they usually do that now on the Vegas trip, it seems. But before we go this week, just want to remind everybody, let your friends know about the show. If you have Flames fans that don't know about us, pass on the word. And make sure you follow us online. You can follow us on Facebook. We're facebook.com/firesidechat. On Twitter, we're @firesidepodcast. Talk to us there. We're always looking to talk with people. We ask every week, what do you guys want us to talk about? And get some great feedback from our listeners. And if you do want to interact with us directly, you can always phone us or text us. Our phone number is 587-200-7176. I wish I could compare those to jersey numbers, but we don't have a 71 or a 76 on this team. 587-200-7176. Send us a voicemail, send us a text. We'd be happy to read your messages on the show. So as you're watching this week's four games, if there's something you really want to say, let us know because we want to hear from you guys. Matt, I think that about wraps it up. What do you think?
Yeah, well, it was a good week in terms of results, and hopefully the Flames can... Like, I'm hoping for 6 points out of this week, but given who we're playing, 4 would be great.
You know, we're always going to have a bad week, and I'm kind of waiting for that bad week to come
soon. Yeah, no, same here. And
I mean, how often have you and I last year got out of the podcast and just been angry at this team? Or sitting here, you know, getting ready for the podcast going, what nice things can we say this week? We haven't had that problem yet.
No,
we
I know.
At some point we're going to, but the issue is when they've played terrible, I wouldn't say terrible, when they play less than desirable hockey like they have recently, how do they bounce back? And this week they have the chance to show us if they can do
that. Well, that's the thing. Like, a good team that's like a legitimate contender, like, okay, you got 5 out of 6 points when you frankly deserved none. Okay. Fix your stuff and let's go. And if they can turn it around while continuing to win, that'll show that they're actually someone to reckon with. If they falter or, like, really falter, then there's still some stuff to work out.
Well, like you said, remember a couple of years ago when they were the find a way Flames, right? And I think this year we're seeing some of that again, but from a good team. It's, hey, we're not doing well, but we're finding a way to win.
Yeah, and
we're a good team. We just got to put our crap together. But until we do, we're still going to find ways to win. And especially if you're going into a 7-game playoff series, that's your need. You're not going to play well every night. You're going to be banged up, but you got to find a way to at least be competitive.
For sure.
So let's see how this goes, Matt. I will talk to you next week, and we'll see if we can get 6 points out of this one.
Thanks for listening, everybody, and have a good week. And as always, go Flames, go.
Fireside Chat is hosted by Dan Stevenson, co-hosted by Matt DeBorg. This episode produced and edited by Peter Marino. Fireside Chat is licensed under a Creative Commons license. For full license details, visit firesidechat.ca.